Thank you so much, Felipe. So I wanted to share some reflections that is very much a work in progress as we listen to different countries' experiences. And we observe that there is a priority of ending child poverty for all the reasons Gonzalo said, the importance of children. And like Alejandra said, they need to be first in line. But there's also a priority of ending multidimensional poverty for the whole country, for different populations, elderly people, people with disabilities, indigenous, and other marginalized groups. And so the question is, in terms of measurement strategies, what are we looking for in the future? So I'll just share four of them briefly. So just an observation, which it seems banal, but it might be worth just reminding memory, that poverty measurement is undertaken in order to end poverty. And that's the same for both national poverty measures and for a child poverty measure. And so the question we have when we turn to measurement strategies is, how do we synergize between child poverty measures and national poverty measures? And the reason we need to ask this question is that in order to make a poverty measure that has a high degree of likelihood of being taken up into policy and used for action, there are the desiderata that we are familiar with, that has to be accurate, it has to be replicable, legitimate, informative for policy design, useful for monitoring trends, and easy to understand by the journalists. It also has to be complementary to existing tools, whether it's a monetary poverty measure, or in countries that have a national NPI, child analysis has to complement it, and it must be nationally owned and operated in some sense to be an official permanent statistic, because we're focusing here on national statistics. And if that's the case, then what we want to avoid is an information overload where there is some kind of competition between a child strategy, which is beautiful in itself and deeply committed and very rigorous and very detailed, but completely distinct from a national NPI that also has its own logic. And so the question that we have in terms of measurement is how the child focus, which is so necessary, can synergize with the overall poverty focus and activate appropriate actions and commitments, but not confuse or befuddle or make one's life more wretched, as Martha Sen said, when there's too much information. And so what both Gonzalo and Alejandra showed was the power, in a sense, of linking child poverty strategies to a national NPI that's already, in a sense, used, understood, and official. And what I'd like to then also observe is that when that's done, then child focus comes into every conversation. If you age disaggregate, and disaggregate by rural and urban, and disaggregate by state, then children will be in every presentation. And further, as they showed, if you go intra-household, you can add details of gender or of age. And I'll speak at the end about the possibility of having a linked child NPI. So what we are observing in this moving field, and we are really learning from all of you in the process, is that there are four strategies that are emerging. The first, Alejandra and Gonzalo both showed, which was including child indicators in the national NPI. And the second that they also showed was age disaggregating the national NPI. And we do think that age disaggregation is really essential and actually amazingly interesting. And then the third and the fourth are a little bit newer. One is to look within the household at each of the children and see how they are deprived in the national NPI indicators by age, by gender, by sibling, by household type. And the fourth is to make a child NPI, but make it so that the household indicator parts of it are the same as the national NPI, or maybe the whole national NPI is included in the child NPI. So I'll go through each one of these in turn. The first is to include key child indicators in the National MPI, how you saw Chile and Mexico with Gonzalo and Alejandra doing that. And that's essential, and in a sense, actually every MPI to date has at least one child indicator in it already. So for example, I wanted to show this slide from Chile, knowing that Dani, the true experts are online, only because, sorry, from Colombia, because Colombia has a dimension on childhood and youth and puts the child indicators together in that dimension. And in the book, which OFI are doing with UNDP on national MPIs, we've gone through and found the different child indicators that the different national MPIs to date already include. And they're listed here, and these slides will be available. But what you can see is in every dimension, which is standard, there are standard indicators widely used that relate to children's deprivations, either at an individual level, like nutrition, or at a household level, like access to water and sanitation, or child labor. So that's the first, including child indicators. The second suggestion, which is really a strong suggestion, is to always disaggregate the national MPI by age. Most data sets would permit disaggregation at least into two age cohorts, 0 to 17 and 18 and above. Sometimes you can get much more fine disaggregation depending on the sample. What do you find out when you do that? At a bare minimum, you find, for example, what is the poverty rate of children versus adults nationally and in each indicator. And we've seen examples from that, from Gonzalo and Alejandra. We can also look across the population and say what percentage of the poor people are children. And of course, how sensitive this is to child's poverty depends on the indicators that are used in the national MPI. I'm going to use examples for the last three from the global MPI, only because it is convenient for us, but the same things are done nationally. So for example, disaggregating the global MPI, we find that half of all of the people who are identified as poor are under the age of 18, so regarded as children. And the striking thing globally is that the headcount ratio for child poverty is 34%. And the headcount ratio for adult poverty is 18%. And so that's really quite a striking difference. And in terms of what Gonzalo said, getting policy attention, these kinds of numbers are very sad. They demand action. And even if it might seem, oh, we're only disaggregating, hopefully they will get the policy attention they deserve. And then if the data permits, you can go further to say, what states, what provinces, if they're living in coastal areas, if they're indigenous, but go on to look further at the characteristics of poor children. The third measurement strategy is a bit newer, and it's to look at the intra-household analysis of MPI. So identify the variables that draw on individual child's data, like school attendance. And then only focusing on children, usually defined as people under the age of 18, you go back and you do a second cut at the analysis with the microdata of the children and look at what percentage of them are girls or boys, what are their age, what percentage of deprived children are multidimensionally poor. When you know all the siblings in a household, how many children are out of school but have a sibling who is in school? And also, what are the common deprivations that children experience? So, for example, out of these 10 indicators, there are three that draw on individual child information. And they are of children of different ages, which is important, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Nutrition, who has completed 10 years of schooling? Anybody above the earth, 10 years and above. And if a child aged 6 to 14 or so is attending school. And as I said, what we want to know is much more detailed. If we're doing a nutrition policy, we need to know at what age. Is it neonatal? or is it children who are 4 years old? Is it the prevalence of girl children or not? And all of these details can be useful for policy. So these are some of the headlines that come up. For example, which indicator of the child poverty is a good proxy? Is it that 85% of out-of-school children are MPI poor? If so, then being an out-of-school child is a relatively good proxy of being MPI poor, whereas if it's 60%, it's less accurate as a proxy. And then you want to know what percentage of out-of-school children have a sibling in school, or in what percentage of them every single child in the household is out of school. That, again, will help with policy design. And also, positive stories. What percentage of children who are aged 10 to 17 live in a household where no adult has completed 6 years of schooling, but that child, or that child and a sibling, has? So the only educated members are children. They are pioneer children. So this is the subject of a study that we've just done in 8 countries of South Asia with UNICEF, and it will be public quite soon. And it's been an interesting exploration of how to use intra-household information in a way that's aligned to a household level measure, like a national MPI, but which also draws out the kind of really policy relevant details that are required to go further in children's deprivations. The last measurement strategy, so the first was including child indicators, the second was age disaggregating to look at child poverty, the third was going inside the household to look at the indicators that rely on individual child data. And the fourth, is to add a new dimension or dimensions that reflect child indicators particularly. So, and this draws on work that Anna Vaj and Christine Oldegas are doing with Ophi and myself. Initially, you use the national MPI in this example, exactly as it is. And then you construct a new child dimension and indicators. And those indicators, to be reflective of a child, need to cover children aged 0 to 17. So there will probably be different indicators for babies, for younger children, and for teenagers. And then you compute a child MPI, and you may link it to the national MPI in different ways. So let me just give you a very quick example in Nepal, and I'll end with this. Nepal took the global MPIs as their national MPI. And in the child study I mentioned, the three dimensions are complemented by a fourth dimension, the child's dimension, with two indicators. They may not be the best names of the indicators, but the child dimension is also weighted at 1/4, as are each of the other three national MPI dimensions. And the child dimensions have indicators that are different for differently aged children. For example, nutrition for children 0 to 4, school attendance for children 5 to 13, and schooling or child labor for people 14 to 17. That's one example in one context that was feasible with the data set that we had. And in this example, the poverty cutoff is set so that the same person who is poor by the national MPI, the same child, will also be identified as poor by the child MPI. However, a child who's not poor by the national MPI could be poor by the child MPI if he or she experiences deprivations in at least 1/4 of the weighted indicators. So very quickly, in Nepal, 28.6 of the population were poor. But among children 0 to 17, with the age disaggregation, purely, it was 33.8%. And with that age disaggregation, we could go inside the household and see actually that girls were doing better than boys in schooling and see the other gendered and age-specific patterns. But when we added child's dimension, we found out that instead of 33.8% of children being poor, it was 14.9%. And then we could see how those children were poor, their patterns, their intra-household and sibling structures of deprivations. So to conclude, there's really a need to integrate a focus on ending child poverty and a focus on ending multidimensional poverty. And so I put on this slide three questions about how we can draw both of these priorities together in a way that activates action, which prevents statistical overflow. The suggestion at the moment is to always include child indicators in the national MPI, always disaggregate by age, always do the intra-household analysis, and then possibly to construct a separate child MPI, whether it is linked to the national MPI, as I've shown, or not. Thank you so much.